Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining me to finish up the show, and I'm looking forward to this, is Michael Arkush. Michael has written or co-written 15 books, including New York Times bestsellers From the Outside with Ray Allen, The Big Fight with Sugar Ray Leonard, and more. And with the second of four golf majors taking place this week down in Charlotte at Quail Hollow, I thought it would be a good time to talk about Michael's new book, The Golf 100, A Spirited Ranking of the Greatest Players of All Time. We love list books. You know, in mentioning just the book that you did about Sugar Ray Leonard, I was thinking that we as sports fans, we love kind of list making and rankings. We'll get to your book. We'll get to golf in a moment. But boxing has always been, right, Michael, one of those sports like golf where the conversation is always about rankings and lists. You know, the greatest ever, the greatest pound for pound fighter of all time. What sport do you think we as sports fans do this the most with?
That's a great question. It seems like we do that with basketball a lot. Maybe that's because LeBron right now is wrapping up his career and we make the comparisons to Michael Jordan. I don't think we do it as much in baseball and football, but certainly in basketball. But you're right, the individual sports, boxing and golf, lend themselves so perfectly for this because there's no place to hide. There's no point guard to blame for not getting you the ball or no coach who didn't start you. You are on your own. And you're exposed, and that's the wonderful thing about those two sports.
Yeah, and in bringing up basketball, it's usually, you know, it can be teams that we rank, you know, the greatest teams of all time, but it's position-based. You know, it's the greatest point guard, it's the greatest center, and in football it would be, you know, the greatest quarterbacks. I think we probably do greatest quarterbacks of all time as much as we do almost anything else.
Yeah, I would think so. I think although a lot of people now kind of put Brady way above there, the debate isn't as great. The debate seems fiercer between Michael and LeBron than any other sport, I think, at this point, other than maybe golf, Tiger versus Jack. But yeah, you're right.
No, that's interesting because I'm not the sports fan and the basketball fan that puts LeBron into that conversation with Michael. I think Michael, for me, it was always Michael or Magic in the, like, with basketball, I think almost with the NBA, tell me if you agree or disagree, I think you almost have to separate the centers out of the conversation.
Absolutely. It amazes me that Kareem and Bill Russell and Chamberlain almost seemed to be put off in this other place, away from Michael and Kobe and LeBron. Let's not forget the impact that Chamberlain had, or the unstoppable hook shot that Kareem had. They were dominant players in basketball, and it's shocking at times to see them being so disregarded.
No doubt. I've always felt that way about the centers. And, you know, it's funny in mentioning Wilt. In the conversation, I think it's always amazing how Wilt just gets disrespected, whether it's the center conversation or not. I don't think in any sport, certainly not a team sport, have we ever seen a bigger outlier in terms of his statistical, you know, career. I mean, there's just nothing that resembles Wilt in the history of basketball.
Agreed. I mean, would he average 50 points a game that year?
Yeah.
That's 100 points in one game,
yep.
And the rebounds and the assists. It may be because part of it may be just the personality. Part of it may be that Russell beat him all the time in the playoffs.
Right.
There's a number of factors, but if you tried to compare somebody like that in baseball or football, there's no way they would be as disregarded as Will is.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the topic, which is the Golf 100. So before I ask you for the formula or the criteria for the rankings, is it as easy to say about number one, it's Jack or Tiger?
I thought it would be a slam dunk starting out that it would be between those two. But the more research I did, the more I learned about Bobby Jones. And again, we're talking about someone who I think who's too easily forgotten in sports. In the 1920s, his last 21 major appearances, he won 13 of them. That includes the Grand Slam in 1930 at the age of 28. By the way, while he had a day job, and then he quit. And then, of course, he started Augusta National, which has an impact to this day. The role of the amateur in golf, he was the guy. And he had two ticker tape parades down Broadway. You cannot overestimate the impact he had on the sport.
So, I mean, I want people to read this book, but there are a couple of things that I'd love to get from you, which is, are you telling me that Bobby Jones is the number one player in this book?
He is not the number one player. What I did, though, I came up with the metric system. I added bonus points for his impact and contribution to the game. And I thought perhaps there was a point that there might be enough numbers there for him that outpaced Tiger or Jack. He did not, but he did wind up number three ahead of Ben Hogan, which I think a lot of people might have a problem with, as great as Hogan was. But it's Jones three, Hogan four.
All right. Tell us what the criteria was. How did you determine the top 100?
Major championships. It's that simple. They are the barometer of greatness in the sport. They're the ones we pay attention to. Four times a year, we focus on what happens. All due respect to the John Deere Classic and so many other tour events. But that's the history of the game. That's what links us back to all the players from the past. The U.S. Open, the British Open, the PGA, the Masters. That's what matters most in golf. So I awarded a certain amount of points, 2,000 for every major victory, 500 per second, 253rd, 104th, and 55th. I gave 300 points for every PGA Tour victory, and then I entered bonus points into the equation, and that includes contribution to the game, impact on the game, etc.
Well, so then I can maybe deduct here that based on the second place finishes and the fact that he's got 18 to Tiger's 15, that Jack was one.
Jack is one, but here's the thing. I don't give him 18. I give him 20. I'm counting the two U.S. amateurs he won in 59 and 61. The U.S. amateur for years, for decades, was considered a major. You go back and listen to, watch the YouTube of Jack's victory in 86 at Augusta. Everybody's saying, Jack has won his 20th major. Suddenly, two were taken away. And I still, to this day, Kevin, I do not know who took them away. And I've talked to a lot of people. So he's got 18. Tiger's got his three U.S. amateurs. But so, I don't count them in the same.
Well, Jack's got 20, you're saying, and Tiger's got 18.
Jack has 20. Okay. And Tiger, I don't count his three U.S. amateurs in the same way because the amateur did not have the prestige it had during Jack's day. Jack was the last highly touted amateur with a chance to make it big who seriously gave consideration to being an amateur his whole career.
The criteria that you came up with, leads to Jack being number one. Before you went through this process, as a golf fan, who did you think was the greatest golfer of all time?
It was really close because I followed Jack as a kid. I covered Tiger as an adult. And how can you not be amazed at Tiger winning with 2,000 U.S. Open by 15, British Open by 8? One dominant performance after another. And I still believe that if you put a gun to my head and said, okay, you've got to put a bet down here right now. Are you putting the money on Tiger versus Jack in an 18-hole match? That's a tough call. But greatness depends on a body of work, and that's where Jack's body of work is higher than Tiger's.
Moving away from the list, and we'll come back to it, but are they the two greatest competitors the sport's ever seen?
That's a great question. There are a few others. Hale Irwin, I don't know of anybody, I wrote this in the book, I put that, you know, nobody in golf was more competitive. And I wonder, and I thought maybe Pete Rose was more competitive. It's close. I mean, Hale Irwin, just, I used to cover him on the PGA, on the Champions Tour, and he was so intense. Every shot was life or death for him. I don't think, as great as Tiger and Jack were, I don't think they necessarily were more competitive than Hale Irwin.
How many, he won a couple of U.S. Opens, right?
Three U.S. Opens,
and that was it, correct?
That's it in terms of majors, yeah, but he had a reputation for winning on the toughest courses. And the majors, the Opens he won, were 74, 79, 1990, his 40s.
The Wingfoot one. One of them was Wingfoot, right, yeah. Where it was like way over par.
Yeah, it was way over. It's called Dick Schaap wrote a book about it called The Massacre at Wingfoot.
Right, right.
It was a brutal course. And that was, many people felt, designed to counter what happened the year before in 73 at Oakmont when Johnny Miller shot a 63 in the final round to win. And the USGA was not going to let another 63 happen.
Right. How important is, and it, to your criteria, was winning the Grand Slam? And I ask about that because I think about a guy like Jordan Spieth, who, if he were to win this weekend, would have a career Grand Slam. Second golfer in this major season to accomplish it. Obviously, Rory the first at Augusta. But Spieth is nowhere near the golfer Rory is, if we're just comparing those two. But career Grand Slam, what did that mean to the rankings?
I did not allocate specific points for that accomplishment. While it's definitely noteworthy, no question about that. But I didn't do that specifically. But Spieth, you're right. Spieth is number 59 in the book right now, and I would have thought he would be so much higher by this point after what he accomplished his first few years. But let's not forget, he's only 31 years old. There's still time. He's one of a number of guys who can still rise up for sure.
I'll ask you about some of those guys here in a moment. But, you know, I got into a bit of a debate with a friend of mine over Rory at Augusta. And I said, you know, that relief at the end, especially after he missed the putt at 18, was more about being back into the major championship winner circle. That was the weight. That was the weight that he'd carried around since, you know, 2014. That he was thrilled to win the career Grand Slam. We got into a debate, and I said, no, the pressure is built because of the lack of a major. Had that come at Quail Hollow and not Augusta, maybe it's not the exact same, but still it would have felt like, you know, the weight of the world was lifted off his shoulders. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's the 10-year drought. I don't really think golf fans, they respect the accomplishment of the Grand Slam, the career Grand Slam. I don't think it rises up to that level that maybe the press sometimes attaches to it.
Right.
I think for sure. Think about it. 2014, we're thinking now 8, 10, 12, maybe more majors. He's in his mid-20s. For him to go 10 years, and now 11 years, without a major title, I don't know how much money I would have put on that not happening. It's incredible. And he's had, as you know, many close calls.
All right. What ranking has generated so far, with the book being out a few months now, what ranking has generated the most controversy or the most pushback from, you know, readers or media people?
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's seems that putting Mickey Wright, number six, as the top female on the list surprises a lot of people. A lot of people didn't know who she was. She won 82 times, 13 majors, basically left the game at the age of 34, had the best swing, even Ben Hogan said so, of any male or female. Everybody assumed Annika Sorensen was number one among women, and I think Anna was fabulous. I think there's a bias that we have too often with players who are playing now, and we forget the whole picture. Mickey Wright was incredible.
Okay, other than Mickey Wright, who else?
Babe Didier-Sanzarius, who I put down, speaking of debates, I rank as the greatest athlete, male or female, of the 20th century. Not Ali, not Jordan, Babe. The Olympic medal she won, she was excelled in other sports, took up golf rather late, and was dominant. And there was a three-year period because that she was barred from the USGA, by the USGA, from competing. So that affected her numbers as well. What an unbelievable athlete. Also, Patty Berg, who won 15 majors. No woman has won more majors. There are a lot of, altogether, there are 15 women on the list.
15 out of the 100. Interesting. The golfer that made the list, period, forget about where he or she was ranked, that surprised you the most.
A guy named John McDermott, who's number 100, who won two U.S. Opens back in 1911, 1912. To this day, at age 19, he's the youngest Open champion ever. And then he experienced some losses in the stock market and went through a lot of other issues and was committed to a psychiatric hospital. And that was it for his career. One interesting end to the whole story with John McDermott, in 1971, he's at the U.S. Open in Marion. He's in the pro shop. And some assistant pro is ushering him out, unaware of who he is. And he's an old guy, he's kind of dressed poorly. At that moment, Arnold Palmer walks into the pro shop, recognizes McDermott, and McDermott is his guest the rest of the week.
And when was he committed to the sanitarium?
This was back in the 19-teens. This was like 16, 1916.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he ended up living full life.
He got out at different... Well, he wound up spending much of his life in institutions.
Oh, wow.
But got out periodically, yeah.
What about a guy, what about, of the men, a player that, you know, it isn't necessarily controversial, but, you know, maybe in the top 20, top 25, that's ranked much higher than you thought, and one that's ranked much lower than you thought?
One much higher than people, and this is somebody a lot of people have never heard of, a guy named John Ball. He played in the 1890s, 1900. He won eight British amateurs, including one at the age of 50. So Phil Mickelson is not the only player with a major in his 50s. He was way up there. He was unparalleled. He was the first really great amateur at that point. And remember, he also, get this, he also served in the Second Boer War, which is a whole other takeaway from this book, all different players who lost time because they served in different conflicts. So I knew very little about him beforehand. So he wound up being in the 20s, and that shocked me, really. People who are not there, who are not as high as maybe, I would have thought a guy like Koepka, I would have thought he would be higher, but he's got five majors, but he's won practically nothing else. But he's in his, 35 right now, so he still has a chance to make up some ground as well. It's amazing he hasn't won. He had a really bad year in majors last year. They're not playing the Masters, so we'll see what happens with him.
It sounds like, based on some of the things and stories that you're leading into, that this book isn't just a list. That, like, how much do you write about each player? Is this book more about kind of the stories and the lives of the players on the list, or the list itself?
Yes. No, more about their lives.
Okay.
I felt really strongly that I wanted to bring life back to a lot of players we've forgotten. I used to read these obits all the time, and you'd see the crawl on the bottom of the screen, so-and-so passes away, and I'd find the obit, it'd be a couple hundred words, like, wait a minute, I want to learn so much more about these guys. So that was a big inspiration for me, is to dive into and try to find out about guys in the 20s and 30s and 40s before there was a lot of media coverage. That was a big part of it. So I tried to make sure there were close to about 1,000 words per person, and then, of course, as the numbers got as the players got up in the rankings, I added more space. So altogether, the book's about 130,000 words.
Wow. How many guys, well, how many players, male or female, are currently playing who are on the list?
Let's see. You've got Rory, who was number 25 in the book, but now since the Masters, he's moved up to number 20. That's another thing. I'm likely going to revise this with a paperback version.
Right.
So Rory's moved up already. You've got Jordan Spieth, who I mentioned, 59. You've got Koepka. You've got Dustin Johnson. He's on the Live Tour, so we don't see him that much,
right.
Him and Koepka. Sergio's on there, another Live Tour guy. Mickelson, you know, plays in the Masters, so not that, and PGA, he'll play in the PGA because he's a PGA champion. But normally, so there's about a half dozen or so guys who are on the list.
You didn't mention Scottie Scheffler.
He's not in the book. I know, and that surprised me too. I mean, his numbers were really close. I closed off the counting of this through the British Open last year, and he came up just short. Needless to say, in a revised version, he'll be in there because he's won a few times since then, and we're not even halfway through the year yet.
Yeah, so on two guys playing today, and I had this kind of on the list of topics, you know, you mentioned Rory, where he is on the list currently and where he was prior to Augusta. Where do you project he will end up in 10 years when you do the paperback version?
Well, I don't think he would have to be an extraordinary amount of success for him to get into the top 10. But it's not impossible. I would say most likely he's going to wind up around 15, maybe 10 to 15. He's got 5 now. He just turned 36. I think in the book I wrote that I thought double digits started to seem out of reach. But let's see. I mean, he could wind up with 9 or 10 majors. But then, I mean, if he gets 9 or 10, he's past Watson. He's past Palmer. He's past players who has 9. So it's hard to say. I'd say probably 10, 12, 13, something like that.
And, you know, Scheffler's not on the list, but, you know, certainly in a few years, the paperback version would probably include him, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping to have it next year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it would include him. And he's in his late 20s, so you would think that he's at 2 now. You would think he's the over-under on him is at least 6 or 7, maybe more. One thing I learned so clearly in this book is players can go on runs, and then suddenly it stops.
Right.
And, I mean, Tom Watson did not win another major past his early 30s. Who would have thought that could happen? Arnold Palmer didn't win a major past his early to mid-30s. So it can just suddenly the droughts can occur, as we saw with Rory. So nothing in this sport is guaranteed, but Scheffler certainly seems on his way.
You know, that was one of the players I was going to ask you about, is Watson. You know, with his 8 majors, but a lot of top 10s, a lot of top 5s. Where did he end up on this list?
Number 12. And it's too bad. You know, you go back to the 2009 British Open at Turnberry, the final hole, when he bogeyed it. If he had parted and won the British Open in 59, I don't know how you feel. I would have put that certainly as the greatest victory in the history of golf,
and perhaps the
greatest victory, period, in any sport.
When he was at the top of that leaderboard, you know, on that Saturday, you know, or heading into late in the weekend, it was amazing. But don't you think on some level that we're going to see something like that in the next 10 to 15 years? I don't know who it will be. It's not going to be Tiger, probably, because of the injuries, but just because of the way people are, you know, it's evolution. The you know, today's 59 is yesterday's 45 or whatever. Do you think we'll see, you know, more players in their 50s win or not?
I'll give you why I think yes and why no. Why? Because you're right. They have support teams. They are incredibly, everything is calibrated. They are in great shape, all that. At the same time, a lot of players, when they get the age of 50 now, they're so rich. How much incentive will there be
True.
For them to continue playing at the level you need to maintain that effort, to maintain that form in order to be ready to win a major championship? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. One other player that I wanted to ask you about, Lee Trevino. How did this list treat Lee Trevino, and, you know, a career that saw, I think, 6 majors and a ton of contentions?
Yeah, 29 tour victories overall. He's number 15. It's amazing. When I spoke to him, he had just, the first time I spoke to him on the phone, he had just been on working on the range. This is, I think he was 82 years old at the time. I was just like, he's 82 years old. What is he doing just hitting balls? He was looking for something else. I mean, that's the greatness of the sport, right? Every time we go play, we say, this is it. Today is the day. I'm going to find it.
Yeah.
And there he is out there doing this. And he does it, at the time, I haven't talked to him that recently, but he was doing it every day. Yeah, he took down Nicklaus. I gave him bonus points. He took down Nicklaus in the 71 Open at Marion. He beat him at 74. He beat him at 72 British Open. And the story of coming back from the poverty that he had growing up, it's remarkable, really.
One other. That was my conversation with Michael Arkush. The book is outstanding. Really enjoyed catching up with him. That was about a month ago when we recorded that, but I thought it was a perfect time to play it right before the U.S. Open gets underway tomorrow. Joe House, by the way, who will join us at noon, we'll talk some NBA playoffs, but we'll talk some golf with Joe as well. You're listening to the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com, or free and live on the Odyssey app.
All right, yesterday it was reported that J.K. Dobbins signed a one-year deal worth up to $5.25 million with the Denver Broncos. The New York Knicks continue their coaching search with very little luck. Their requests to interview Ime Udoka and Jason Kidd were both denied. Team USA Soccer played Switzerland in their final tune-up for the Gold Cup and got worked by a score of 4-0. This will extend their losing streak versus European teams to 8 games, including a home losing streak of 4 games. The Nats, they fall to the Mets. Jeff McNeil hits the walk-off hit, and the Nats leave 7 runners on base with ample opportunities to close. They still can't get it done. They'll continue their series tonight at Citi Field. Charlie and Dave will have you covered with Nats on Deck at 6:40. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1, and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.